Hello, Paris!
Hello and welcome to People and Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin, and this week a special edition shot at VivaTech here in Paris. The event bills itself as the largest tech and startup event in Europe, but what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? Tech is the driving force in the world economy today, but Europe only represents a small share of it. There are no European tech giants to really speak of, and a US behemoth like Apple has a market valuation greater than the entirety of France's CAC 40 index. So we asked members of the French-German Tech Lab why and if they thought Europe was lagging behind.
Well, I would say if you have a look at the pure number of players and the size of players, then potentially Europe is lagging a bit behind the States and China, a bit of a different animal. But I think if you have a look deeper, basically when it comes to, let's say, the quality of the technology, the innovation, then Europe is definitely on a very good track to compete decently. But I think it's sometimes hard to develop that pure size, basically, that the other ones are able to develop.
Well, I don't think Europe is lagging behind. I think we have top engineers from the highest universities and schools, and they are at the top level worldwide. So we have a lot of projects that can be valorized through startups, and we need more easy fundings for early stage startups, deep tech startups especially, and we need also to facilitate, in the case of medical startups, the regulatory pathway in order to maintain the first patient in Europe and make sure that this benefits first to European countries before going abroad.
Why is there no European tech giant the way there are American or Chinese tech giants?
They have the money, that's the point. Or weak point, the ability to raise billions of euro or billions of dollars for the startup. That's where we need to be clearly better, as most of our great ideas are purchased by the US Magnificent Seven. Or if you look at the US tech, who are the leader? It's French developer. Who are the best in China about manufacturing? German engineers.
So for more on this, let's speak with Claire Nouet. She's the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder at Pathway, a deep tech startup that specializes in real-time data processing or live AI, meaning that you developed a system that is able to process a huge amount of data that's constantly changing. So this is extremely helpful for sectors like shipping or logistics. It's also been used by a Formula One racing team as they gather lots of data during a race. And they're able to then process this. Thank you so much for being with us today, Claire.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with talking about Pathway. It's a European startup. It was grown with European venture capitalists, with support from European public institutions. How would you describe the experience of growing up in that European tech ecosystem?
So for us, it was an interesting choice. We have people from various nationalities among the co-founders and among the early employees. And so we really had to decide in which countries we were settling. Like, it wasn't an obvious choice, like, everyone is French, let's settle in France. Eventually, we started out of France because the ecosystem made sense for us, for a deep tech company to start with. Like, we had a long R&D phase before even getting the first product on the market, and it was like the environment we needed at this stage of the company.
And so now you've expanded in the United States. You've set up an office in Palo Alto in the Silicon Valley. How would you describe that experience compared to how your company grew in Europe?
So we felt we needed to go to the US. As it happens, we have a source available version of Pathway online, and a large part of our community is based out of the US. So we have people out of more than 100 plus countries, but the US is really a dominant market for us, and we needed to be closer to our community. We also needed to be closer to capital, which is a tougher question in Europe, is how well can you fund those type of ventures and at what dilution rates as well.
So it's always a logical next step. If you're a startup that wants to grow, you have to go to the United States if you want to go to bigger and better things?
For us, it was, I guess it would very much depend on what you're doing. It may be slightly different for a biotech or medtech who have more regulatory constraints. But for us, it seemed indeed like the natural step.
So if you're thinking about the European environment for the tech industry compared to America, what would you ask to European policymakers in terms of what needs to change for Europe to stay competitive or be more competitive?
I think on the policy side, we're pretty competitive. People like to say that Europe is not, and I'm not sure it comes from policy making. For me, the challenge I see is regarding funding, because at some point it does cost money to build those ventures, and you need to be willing to take this risk. And the risk culture that we have in Europe is slightly different. Things have been done in the right direction with the European Innovation Council and all those institutions, but it still does take time, and hopefully we'll see the outcome in a few years. Hopefully it's not too late.
Claire Nouet, you are the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder at Pathway. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
And now let's get the policymaker's perspective. Andres Sutt is with me. He's the Minister for Energy and Environment of Estonia, also formerly the Minister for Entrepreneurship and IT. Estonia is a very interesting case study. It's often hailed as an exemplary European tech hub with 100% of its government services that are in digital form. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start talking, obviously, about the European tech ecosystem. Some of the criticisms we often hear, especially from foreign companies that try and get into the European market, is that there's over-regulation, there's strict labor laws, that all that makes it difficult for Europe to actually compete with the rest of the world in the tech sector. How do you respond to these criticisms?
For sure, we have a talent here. For sure, we have capital here. It's true, but this capital is not always deployed for venture purposes. But that, I think, boils down to a simple question. How much risk we are ready and willing to take? And here, I think we should be much more bold at the European stage, because if we look just merely on assets on the management for a pension funds, it's 9 trillion, and only 0.01% is invested in venture. So there is a huge upside of a capital to be deployed. And I think we need to be able to build an ecosystem where company is founded in Europe, grown in Europe, scaled in Europe, IPO'd in Europe. If I just take Estonia, we started with a Skype. We have now Bolt, which is also used here in France. There is Playtech, many others. So there is, I think, the ecosystem is there. If it can be done in Estonia, it should also be possible in any other corner of Europe.
What stood in the way of Europe getting its own tech giant the way that we see those companies in the US or China? Why hasn't there been a European tech giant?
Why don't we have 1 trillion valuation company in Europe? For me, it goes back to the same point of our readiness to take risks. I mean, if our pension funds, either for regulatory or other purposes, are constrained in investing in venture, I think that is certainly one of the reasons. As I said, we don't lack the talent. There is plenty of it in Europe. And also, we don't lack the capital. Because if we add the other funds, we have more than like 30 trillion assets under management. That is, I think, more than sufficient to create 1 trillion valuation companies. And then I think we also need to see then the market not only as Europe, but the world. Maybe this has been related a bit to the ambition, but and maybe we have been too shy or too risk averse in just making a bet, because I mean, if one thinks back of Skype in case of Estonia, that was just the right bet in the right time without any certainty that this will deliver the superior outcomes. And this type of, I would say, 1990s, maybe first decade of this millennium mindset is what we need to open up again.
Another dimension of this idea of tech competitiveness has to do with energy. AI has huge energy needs. Companies are looking to scale up their energy provision. How does Europe continue to be competitive in that field whilst keeping on track with the green transition?
I think AI actually could be well the facilitator, because oftentimes when the renewable energy projects seek for financing, they also need somebody who is a good off-taker. And data center, obviously, is a very good off-taker, not only for renewable, but also for a nuclear energy. And I think the more we use the AI as a tool to make processes more efficient, to save time and money, this will also help to reduce the overall footprint on the environment. And we are, for me, the trend is very strong and clear. Energy system is going to be clean. The only question is how fast we transition, because last year 85% of total investment made in new power generation capacities were renewable. And it's our duty to pick up the pace in Europe to have this technological superiority, which this is, I think, what we need in order to also enable the birth of 1 trillion valuation companies in Europe.
Andres Sutt, you're Estonia's Minister for Energy and Environment. Thank you so much for speaking with us on France 24.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this special edition of People in Profit from VivaTech here in Paris. As usual, if you want to watch our previous episodes, you can watch them on the France 24 app or by looking for People in Profit on the podcast platform of your choice. In the meantime, thank you for watching and stay tuned to France 24.
It was the middle of the day, then pulled down his trousers and forcibly removed mine. And he did horrible things to me. Then he threatened me, if you tell anyone, your teacher or your family, I'll kill you.
We were often beaten up. If they gave us an order, we had to obey without delay. It was as if they were the masters and we were their slaves.
Madrasas, as we know, are what we call in Urdu a ghar, means a real powerful hold, and where abuse is happening all the time. We know that.
I want justice to be done. If he is severely punished, all the madrasas will be afraid of abusing a child.
Pakistan, broken innocence. An investigation into sexual violence in the madrasas. Watch our special documentary on France 24 and France24.com.